Hello, Pinellas County and Tampa Bay. On behalf of our Pinellas County One Place, Many Voices Oral History Project and Radio St. Pete, I'm Deb Carson, and today we're talking arts and culture in one of our most beautiful towns, one with a lengthy and storied history, and that's Safety Harbor. I love it. And specifically, a place, a very unique place that has remarkably only in the last several decades established Safety Harbor as a significant center for innovative arts, indeed in Pinellas County. So we are very fortunate indeed to have with us today the director of the delightful, amazing, and hugely impressive Safety Harbor Arts and Music Center, Autumn Pearson. Welcome, Autumn.
Thank you. It's so fun to be here and to represent the Safety Harbor Art and Music Center.
And I will say, as we go through the interview, I know that the acronym is SHAMC, because that's a mouthful.
Uh-huh.
So it's, I believe I understand it's called SHAMC.
That's who we are.
Okay. So please bear with me. Yeah. I'd like to start off with a little bit of Safety Harbor history for those in our audience who may not be familiar. This background, I believe, is fundamental to the town's now well-established, well-deserved reputation as a singular Pinellas place for arts and culture, owing in very large measure to two childhood friends born and raised in Safety Harbor. More about that in a minute. Back to a little history. Now, despite Safety Harbor's natural beauty, and it is a beautiful place, the town may remain little known to some since it's kind of tucked away. It's off the main streets. It's on the western shores of Upper Tampa Bay in northeast Pinellas County. And while not the pristine ancient wilderness it once was back in 1823, it was, perhaps in part, what compelled a French businessman to settle there. This entrepreneur has been credited as the first to introduce citrus as a commercial crop on the Pinellas Peninsula, which then brought more interest and dollars to the territory, which was in full swing 22 years before Florida even became a state in 1845. So it's got a storied history, Safety Harbor. 50 years after that, Florida's citrus industry now thriving, Safety Harbor sat front and center as the health-driven tourist destination, which was part of the 20th century health tourism boom, where doctors from all over, and especially in the North, in the U.S. North, doctors would send their sickly and very affluent northern patients to take the healing waters. That's what they would call it, take the healing waters. Safety Harbor's natural mineral-rich Espiritu Santo Springs was known to be such a place then, and still is today. The Safety Harbor Resort and Spa, established on this very spring in 1925, 101 years ago, has arguably been the primary draw to Safety Harbor until now. When two local artists named Todd Ramquist and Kira Linda injected a new creative spirit into this historic community. The duo were childhood next-door neighbors in Safety Harbor, and, as the story goes, and Autumn, correct me if this is wrong, Todd and Kira Linda fell in love in their seventh grade art class at Safety Harbor Elementary. Then they traveled the globe as working artists and later as life partners, and they returned to their beloved Safety Harbor and in 1985 bought a small 1920s gingerbread cottage. And today, 41 years later, they still live and work in this same cottage, which is unbelievable if you've ever been there, but I'll tell you about that in a second. And dear listeners, if you know of this cottage, and you should know of this cottage, and luckier still, when you visit the cottage, or if you've already been, we know and celebrate this cottage as Whimsyland. So, Autumn, tell us more about these two remarkable artists, Todd and Kira Linda, how their world travels fueled their work as artists, their specific interest in folk art, and how their modest cottage became the catalyst that would lay the foundation that established Safety Harbor as a significant arts and culture center in Pinellas County and Tampa Bay.
Well, I would love to tell you about Todd and Kira Linda because they are two of my favorite people and deep inspirations in my life. They are an incredible couple who did meet early in life compared to most. They went to Dunedin Middle School and High School together, were fast friends, and kind of decided in upper high school that maybe they were meant to be more than just friends. And they've rolled together as the Whimsy Twins now for quite a while. They are a dynamic duo indeed, and they really feed off of each other and for their individual and collaborative passions about the arts. And part of their passion is about travel too. They have been everywhere and they continue to enjoy traveling. And I think it's through their travels that they have been inspired by art and by art environments, and specifically folk art, and how art can represent culture and how art can be a means of communication and expressing ideas and bringing community together. And I think organically, their art and their way of living created an art environment, which is Whimsyland. And before it was Whimsyland, it was called the Bowling Ball House. So some people call it the Bowling Ball House, and some people call it Whimsyland. And it has been referred to as the Bowling Ball House because in the beginnings of all of this, Todd and Kira Linda are collectors, and they were at a flea market, and a gentleman had a large pile of bowling balls, and he said, everyone can take 10 free bowling balls. And Todd and Kira Linda have the philosophy of just saying yes because it's way more fun than saying no. So I imagine that they looked at each other and said, 10 free bowling balls? That means we get 20. Let's do it. And so they rolled out literally with 20 bowling balls, and they decided that that would be a cool way to start doing their landscape edging. And I think probably through that and through their collections and how they work and create, their inside of their home need for having art everywhere spilled out into the outside and created an art environment. And now Whimsyland is one of 150 recognized art environments in the United States, and there are 1,400 recognized art environments worldwide. So it's really incredible to be able to have something that significant here in Pinellas County and that was made by two people who are the products of Safety Harbor, and to continue in that give back.
It's a pretty amazing early story, and the story just gets more and more amazing. But and it now does. Let me ask you this. This is a home that they still live in.
They do.
And that they decorated their home and it spilled out into the outside world. What in the world led them to then open up their home, which I know is there's an admission to that, and we can talk about that in just a second. But how, it's not that big of a house. How in the world did they come to saying, okay, geez, let's just open up the home to everyone's. Yeah. We want to share our internal private space that's right. Very artistic.
Well, I wouldn't say there's anything private about Todd and Kira Linda. They really live their life out loud and in full force. And I think the two of them navigate in a way where they want to experience as much of life as possible. They never sit down. They're always seeking out the next creative spot, the next music show, the next art show. They're just real curious individuals. And I don't think that they ever sat down and had the conversation and said, hey, let's create this art environment and have people come through and make it a space. And that was their intent. It's just who they are. And one of the things that is often said is like, oh, they're just these hippies making this crazy house. And they're not hippies at all. They're artists. They are artists through and through. And their creation and their drive as hardworking artists is what created Whimsyland as we know it. And I think that just through their creation and their constant outside working and people walking by and seeing them working and creating installations in and around their house, because that's what felt good to them visually as artists and what they wanted to see and how they wanted to represent their house. I think that the curiosity of the community was piqued, and people just were like, what are you doing over here? And let me see what's going on. And they're warm and wonderful people. And they said, yeah, come on in, let me show you. And I think just through how they are and who they are created this space. I don't think it was ever a set intention of let's create an art environment. And that's true in how most art environments come to be.
So it was, I mean, it was really when you see the word organic in the dictionary, you're going to be able to see Todd and Kira Linda's name next to that about how they have, how their business has developed. Because, yeah. I mean, when you, even in the freer wheeling parts of the art world, they're filled with business goals and they're filled with marketing plans. And yeah. those things, of course, always have their place. But it doesn't sound like they sat down, as you say, and they said, this is what we're looking to do. This is how we're going to do it. This is how we're going to grow. And this is how we're going to fund this. And there was not a business plan or a marketing plan or any kind of, it just sort of was happening.
That's not who Todd and Kira Linda are. Todd and Kira Linda are working artists. They apply for shows. They do shows. They are working artists, but it's never their intention to create Whimsyland as a business model. It's their home.
This is, folk art is very different.
Yes.
And I'm probably not even giving credit where credit is due. It sounds like it is much more expansive beyond just folk art as that particular genre of art goes. But it's, if people are coming to Whimsyland and indeed to Shamsi with the idea that they're going to a museum or a gallery or something that's much more a familiar, labelized type of thing. Mm-hmm. They're not going to see that, are they?
No.
Tell me what they are going to see.
There is nothing curated about Whimsyland or Shamsi. Whimsyland, like we have talked about here, is Todd and Kira Linda's home. They are lovers of art, and they are also lovers of music. And as part of the evolution of Whimsyland, an offering of a big gazebo was given, of which they said yes to, because yes is way more fun than saying no. And so a large gazebo is on the property, and their love for live music was so deep that they wanted to share it with the community. So as they were traveling around and listening to music, they would engage with the artist and say, hey, we have this gazebo. Would you like to come and play and do a house concert? And musicians did, Jeff Daniels being one of them. And so these house concerts became a thing, and people would not only have curiosity about Whimsyland as an art environment, but they would come to hear music. And I think that Todd and Kira Linda quickly realized that the Safety Harbor, the Tampa Bay, the Pinellas County area has a love for live music and would support that should it grow bigger. And I think that's when the idea of the Safety Harbor Art and Music Center came to be, is they literally outgrew their space and they wanted to be able to offer more art and music opportunities and have more community building space to use the arts as a conduit for human connection.
Now, physically, where Whimsyland and their home mm-hmm. is located is not immediately adjacent to Shamsi.
No.
So where was the gazebo? Is it still where the music events take place? And how did Shamsi evolve from Whimsyland?
Yeah.
And now they're essentially, they're kind of sister.
We're related, yeah. So it's all connected. So Whimsyland, Todd and Kira Linda's home, and the gazebo are on one property.
Okay.
And then as they grew and they had the idea of creating a nonprofit art center, the old Rigsby home, 5 blocks down the hill in mm-hmm. Safety Harbor, became available, and that's the spot now where the Safety Harbor Art and Music Center is located. So they're 5 blocks apart, but their roots are the same. It's just an expansion of the vision of using arts to build community and to bring people together. So we outgrew the gazebo, and we had to have a big, you know, huge mirrored mosaic paneled building for all of this wonderfulness to happen.
And that's pretty hard to miss. I mean, Safety Harbor is not a big, big place. It's entirely walkable, which is one of the joys of Safety Harbor and the shops and everything that there is. I mean, there's so much in Safety Harbor. But how, if you're walking along Main Street, which is the main drag, are you going to pass Shamsi?
You are going to pass Shamsi. We're 1 block off of Main Street, but as I mentioned, we're a very tall, fully mirrored mosaic. There's 300 panels, mosaics everywhere. you would really have to be off in La La Land to miss the Safety Harbor Art and Music Center. It is one street off of Main Street, but it's loud and it's big, and if you have curiosity in your heart, you're going to find it. And when you find it, you're going to be completely blown away, because it's a really creatively magic spot that when people walk in, I think they're awestruck, they're curious. The question is always, they're kind of like looking up at the ceiling and all around doing a 360, and they're like, what is this place? And then that allows us to tell our story, and we're just very proud of who we are and how we've evolved.
And I think there's a pretty large decorated pink elephant outside too that's makes it even harder to miss, I believe.
Definitely. So as the art center was evolving and the idea became something that wanted to be built a little bit less organically than Whimsyland. This was built with intention of being a nonprofit, of building community. Heather Richardson came on board as the third founder of the Safety Harbor Art and Music Center and was really instrumental in building that part of our organization. And I believe that it was Heather's idea to create a full-size, large, pink elephant sculpture, and that has been kind of our mascot and a big part of our image and marketing. So we use Ellie in a lot of our promotional materials, and you know, just look for the pink elephant and you'll find the art center, things like that. So Ellie definitely is a representation of how big and wild a dream can be.
That's great. So look for Ellie. Pink elephant, Ellie.
You can't miss her.
That is her name. Say hello to Ellie.
Yes.
So it's a pretty, I mean, it's an impressive and sprawling and wildly decorated campus.
Yes.
With lots of buildings and many more programs. So it just keeps evolving and evolving. I mean, you've got music and you've got programs for kids and you've got tours and you've got how many staff people do you have and how many volunteers do you have?
Well, let's talk about the volunteers first, because Shamsie would not exist without the volunteers. Actually, Shamsie was built by our volunteers. So it took 3 years, 300 volunteers to literally build Shamsie. And in the gazebo that I mentioned before, groups of people would come together and volunteers and make these big, beautiful mosaic panels. And all those panels were collected, and that's what makes the facade. For years and years and years, Shamsie was run solely by volunteers. So we have over 40 national music concerts and touring artists that roll through the stage each season. Our music season is October through May, and that we're celebrating our 10th year. So that's been going on for 6 years, completely volunteer run. And then Heather had the idea of building an artery, which represents local artists, and we've grown that from a handful to now we have over 90 local artists who are represented in our gallery space.
And artery is the gallery. I believe it's capital A, capital R, capital T, and then small E-R.
Exactly. The artery, a unique boutique. And we're really proud of our ability to showcase local artwork and give people an opportunity to learn more about the local artist in our community. That was really spearheaded also by Heather Richardson. She was had a vision about that. And so Todd and Kira Linda created Whimsyland. The vision of Whimsy was born. The vision of the art center came to be. And then it took a lot of people to get that going. I've actually been the director now. I'm rolling in on my fourth year. So I guess you could say I was the first staff person.
Oh, wow.
In a way.
And you are a whirling dervish. You're everywhere, every place, online, in person.
You got to keep the arts alive. And that's the only way to do it, I guess, is to be a whirling dervish. I haven't been called that before, but I kind of like it. And now we have about 5 or 6 staff members that are holding it all together. I call them the dream team. So we have people in different areas keeping things alive. Our marketing director is amazing. We have an artery manager who is wonderful. We have artery sales associates. We have, you know, people who are helping on the business side. And all of this work is done by very few hands. And we just really rely on our volunteers when we have our big events to come and help support. And that, I think, is what is so beautiful about our organization, is the sense of community that happens within our volunteerism, but also the sense of community that happens with our participants, our campers, our students, our families. You just all become one somehow. And it's really hard to parse out how it all fits together, because I just see us as one big creative family, really trying to nurture the future and provide impact.
Well, I mean, you guys are the essence of yes. I mean, I know that that's something that I've read about you. I've read that, you know, Todd and Kira Linda talk about it so much better and so much more fun to say yes than no.
So much.
And I think that's just such a great philosophy. And it's as if every day with all of your programs, and there's so many of them, which I want to talk about in a second, are just, they're just all such big yeses, and there's just tons of them. So I want to talk about Autumn Pearson just a little bit.
Let's do it.
Now, and again, I'll ask you to correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that your family was originally seasonal residents of Safety Harbor that goes back to the 1960s.
Yeah.
Where was your primary home? Where did you live?
Yeah, so my great-grandfather was a snowbird in Safety Harbor, so my mom and her sisters would come down on spring break, and then my grandfather was a snowbird, and I'd come down on spring break, so it's very generational. I've been coming to Safety Harbor as long as I can remember, and I remember when there was one restaurant and the streets were made of shell, and so I've watched it grow. It's been very interesting to be a part of Safety Harbor, although not living there full time, just popping in for a spring break here or a Christmas break there. But our family originally still has a family farm in Indiana, in southern Indiana. We grew up on a big family farm. My grandfather had four daughters and a big farm. And my mom still lives on the farm, and so does another sister. And so we grew up in southern Indiana and really loved our times coming to Safety Harbor. It seemed so very different as a child. The Spanish moss in the trees, the tropical dewy smell of Safety Harbor. It was always a very magic place for me. And I never imagined that I would be living here and being a part of this, but I'm so happy that I am.
So I'm going to ask you how you came to be here. Now, I understand that you have lived in North Africa. You have lived in Morocco. And I read that you founded an English school and worked with found objects as an artist yourself. And found objects is such, I mean, it's a whole area of art unto itself, even within folk art. Yeah. But that you yourself are a found objects artist, and you have been for a while, and a teacher.
Yeah.
So tell us about that, and how all of that weighed into your path that took you here as a resident.
Well, it's been a wild ride, and it's fun to reflect on. I've loved art from the moment I understood what art was. I've always been an artist. It's how I spent my time as a child. I wasn't super interested in toys or TV. I wasn't allowed to have video games, thankfully. So I just have always been an artist. I can't ever really remember identifying as anything other than an artist. And I went to school for art and education, and I've always had a very big heart and wanted to work with marginalized populations, or indigenous populations are very part of my history. My first teaching job was on Zuni Pueblo, and that was a very wonderfully rich experience for me. The Zuni Pueblo people are known for their art and their creativity, and so it felt a community that, although I was not a part of, I was a part of because of the arts, and very much brought into and accepted, and have such great family there, and had a wonderful first teaching experience. I lived on Zuni Pueblo for 5 years and still consider it one of my many homes away from homes. And then I moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico to do my master's in organizational leadership, and eventually worked as an administrator, primarily an ESE director, assistant principal, and principal, but always in schools that were focused on students who had social emotional needs, were marginalized in some way. That's always been very important and critical to me as an educator, that I'm working to make sure that everyone is seen and heard and has accessibility to the learning styles that they need. And I always found that art was always a route for that. So because I am an artist and that's just who I am, I taught through what I know. And so I taught through the arts and I led through the arts. And that was definitely always a foundation for me professionally. And after about 17 years in public education, with 10 of those being in administrative positions, I was offered an artist in residence in a small town in Morocco to teach in the community how to use recycled materials to create art. And I have always struggled with being a teacher and wanting to be an artist. So I would give up teaching for a while and I would just focus on my art. And so I'd kind of had my limit with public education and I said yes. I channeled my inner Todd and Carolinda even before I deeply knew them. I knew Todd and Carolinda at this time, but I didn't deeply know them. And I put in my letter of resignation and I got a one-way ticket to Morocco and I just took a beat and I just let the world open its door to me. And I'm so happy that I did, because I was able to live in really amazing communities throughout Morocco, the Berber communities specifically, which are the indigenous people of Morocco, and teaching and showing people how to use recycled materials led me throughout Morocco doing several different artist in residencies. I spent a lot of time in the Canary Islands doing the same thing. And as I was kind of weaseling my way back home, I actually sent Todd and Carolinda a message and I said, hey, what do you think about me doing an artist in residency at Shamsi? And of course they said,
yes.
Yes, because yes is way more fun than saying no.
They probably said, yes, please.
And so on my way back to Safety Harbor, I stopped off at a city in Morocco that I'd had a lot of curiosity about called Essaouira. It's the art capital of Morocco. It has the Gnawa Festival, which is a United World Heritage Music Festival, and I wanted to check this out. It was very intriguing to me. And as I was rolling around the Medina, I peeked in this little shop, and there was this wonderfully handsome face who peeked back at me, and something jiggled in my belly, and I just knew that that was my person. And I had only met him and been around him for 5 days, but I knew I'd never been married. I never thought about marriage or any of that kind of thing. I was an artist, and I was on the warpath.
But you too said
yes. And we only had 5 days, so I didn't really say yes at that moment. But I found my way to Safety Harbor. I did my artist in residency, and Khalid and I kept in touch the whole time. And Todd and Carolinda and Heather said, will you please stay and launch an education program for us? And I had to say no. It was one of the only times I said no, because I had met this man and I needed to go because I thought that maybe he was the one, and he was. And so I ended up staying in Morocco for 5 years and just really being able to dive in and learn about Moroccan culture and his family, and teaching English and understanding how important it was for the families that found me and that I found to teach English and to do that through the arts and to build community there. And in that time, Heather most persistently called me and said, it's time, we need you. Can you please come and launch an education program? And the pandemic happened, and so that put a little weight on things. But 5 years later, I found my way back and launched an education program, and then started kind of noodling around with my organizational brain and said, hey guys, let's build this out. Let's really go for it and create an organization that supports as many people as possible. And I think that's the road that we're on now.
It's so impressive when I read about it, when I'm there. So please tell everybody about all of the programs. Our time is becoming short. So please tell about the
Loud
programs.
So Loud and Proud. First and foremost, we offer over 40 nationally touring concerts every year, October through May. We did 48 last year. 8 of them were Grammy winners. So it's a really impressive lineup. So if you're interested in live music, Shamsie is definitely a place to seek out. We do blues, singer-songwriter. All genres are welcomed. We have over 150 programs for pre-K students, children, all the way through adult programming, and a big emphasis on senior programming. Our hub and what we're really focused on right now are the teens. We really want to dedicate a lot of our time and space to teen programming. There's a huge need, and I love working with teens. They're very inspirational age group for me personally. We do 8 weeks of summer camps. We have free teen programming on Wednesdays. We have ceramics. We have mosaics. We have series of watercolors, collage, acrylic painting, on it goes. So there is really something happening every single day at Shamsie. Our artery is open. Most days we're closed on Mondays. And maybe Tuesdays we're thinking about opening up because there's just such a need and a want to be there.
And that's the gift shop,
The gift shop. And then our campus is open. You can walk around Whimsyland from sunup to sundown free of charge. You can walk around. We're going to look towards having some inside-out tours this year where you'll actually get to go inside Whimsy and Casa Loco, which is another art environment that Todd and Kira Linda have created and have a continued experience at Shamsie. There's a lot of programming going on, and there's a lot of new developments that are coming this year that we're really excited about.
Oh, it's really amazing. And the fact that there is no admission charge for any of this is astounding. So tell me, if you can, just briefly a little bit about the funding. And obviously, you're a nonprofit, so how people can support if they would choose to do that.
So we are a nonprofit, and our goal is to make the arts accessible to everyone. There are prices connected to the music, but it goes directly back to the artist. Our nonprofit is about supporting emerging artists and giving artists an opportunity to create and build audience. We try to keep our prices very, very low because most of our supplies for our art classes come through donation. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a materials fee. There's never a materials fee at the Art Center.
That's impressive. That's really impressive.
Yeah, it's really great. We really love when people recognize that they have shifted gears with their own creative expression and they have a bunch of materials they want to give us, or if there's an unfortunate situation where someone has passed in their life that was an artist and they bring us their materials, it just keeps going and we're able to provide a lot of programming at a reduced cost because of that. Membership is really, really important. So if you're interested in keeping the arts alive and community alive, becoming a member and giving at Shamsie, I would say, is a great option. We definitely value every dollar that comes through, and we stretch it as far as it can go, because our belief is really to make as much happen as possible. And we have membership levels available from $10 a month on up. So sponsorships also are something that we're seeking out this year to maybe sponsor a teen art night, because our teen programming is free. Sponsor a kid for camp. Maybe a business might want to sponsor a concert or something. So there's a lot of ways in which to get involved. And we do have some really great grant opportunities coming up this year for us that we're excited about, that's going to allow us to build infrastructure and new programming.
This is fantastic. Autumn, I cannot thank you enough. Please tell people again how they can find you physically and how they can find you online.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, one of the grants I'm really excited about was through the Live Music Society.
Yes.
And the grant that we received is going to allow us to have a podcast, and we're really excited about that. So you can find us at the Safety Harbor Art and Music Center.org, Shamsie.org. You can join our newsletter. You can follow us on Eventbrite to get live ticket drops. And you can find us physically at 706 2nd Street North. You can find Whimsyland at 1206 3rd Avenue North. And we just want anyone and everyone who has any curiosity about the arts, about our collective, about participating, to please feel welcome to come. You might have a little trepidation about art, but the Safety Harbor Art and Music Center is a very welcoming place, and I think you'll find that art is a great way to feel a little bit more free in your mind, maybe reduce that stress. And my biggest philosophy is the arts are not a luxury, they are a necessity. For those of us who are artists, we need a space to create, and CHAMCE provides that for all.
That's great. And it's even for newbies who are wanting to sort of dip their toe in the water, where they thought about it but haven't done it.
It's a very
safe place. Mm-hmm. And what is CHAMCE going to say to you?
Yes! You did a great job. We're so happy you came.
Well, thank you so much, Autumn. This was wonderful. I can't wait to go back. I'm going to investigate some classes because, you know, my little art sensibility is tapping me on the shoulder again, saying, isn't it time?
And ticket links are dropping now. So everything should be pretty much out there in terms of our art programming by August 1st. Some music links are dropping and things are happening. I want to just definitely give a shout out for our 10th year anniversary. It's going to be called Creative Carnival, and it's going to be December 4, 5, and 6th, and it is going to be a party. So you don't want to miss that. It's going to be incredible. Big music, big artist, big time, big feathers, big costumes, big chance to get involved.
That sounds awesome. What a great time of year to be able to do that. Well, thank you so much again. I appreciate it. On behalf of the Oral History Project for Pinellas, on behalf of Radio St. Pete, I'm Deb Carson. Thank you for such a great session, Autumn, and we'll talk to you soon.